Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. It's every parent's worst nightmare, a trip to the urgent care for their 9-year-old daughter's stomach pain and vomiting, eventually resulting in a diagnosis of neuroendocrine cancer, a rare type of cancer in which tumors form in the body's organs. In this two-part episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, Lloyd and LaWanda Cox explain what led up to their daughter Chloe's diagnosis and the treatment process that required a liver and pancreas transplant. Tune into part two tomorrow to hear about Chloe's recovery, how she's doing now, and how the experience impacted their family. Can you walk me through Chloe's initial cancer diagnosis? How did you find out that something was wrong? And, you know, what was the process of identifying what it was?
Chloe became sick. She was having stomach pain. She was vomiting and she was running a fever. And we took her to the urgent care. And they told us that it was just a virus and it would have to take its course. And then another day went by and she, you know, still a high fever. So then the day after that, we took her to the urgent care once again and they took blood and they told us that.
They also tested her for strep, flu.
Yes.
Did multiple different tests.
Yeah, and everything came back negative. Her blood work looked okay. And they sent us home again.
Yeah, said it has to take its course. You know, it could be 7 to 14 days potentially.
Yeah, so at this time we was towards the end of the week. And then when Saturday came, she wasn't getting any better. Like her fever would not break.
It actually increased. It got higher. So
yeah, so we decided to take her to the ER on Sunday. And when we took her to the ER, we met Dr. Morgan, and Dr. Morgan examined Chloe's abdomen, and she knew something was wrong just by feeling her tummy. So she sent us straight to get a sonogram, and we got the results from the sonogram. And the only thing that Dr. Morgan could tell us is that she saw numerous pockets in her liver. And that they wanted to send her out to University of Maryland to get further evaluated. We didn't know like what was going on. She couldn't give us a diagnosis at that time, but just to hear that she had numerous pockets, we didn't even really understand what the pockets were.
Yep, and just a quick background too, Chloe has never missed any of her yearly pediatric appointments. And when she went to, when we took her to urgent care, the week leading up to the emergency room, they also examined and felt her abdomen, but they didn't notice anything, or they didn't tell us that they felt anything irregular. So it wasn't until
Dr. Morgan, she actually felt that Chloe's liver was enlarged. And then the sonogram showed Dr. Morgan that it was numerous pockets. So they rushed her to the University of Maryland Children's Hospital. And
yeah, she would end up being there for 2 weeks running a fever. And during that stay, that's when they did a biopsy of her liver and was able to determine that she had a rare type cancer found in children, neuroendocrine tumor. They told us generally it's found in adult men, I believe, 60 years and older. So they said it was a very rare case and not a lot of information on it.
Yeah. And it was very devastating. And I just remember asking the doctor at University of Maryland, which is Dr. York. I asked her, you know, like, well, what is this? What does it mean? Can it be treated? And Dr. York told us, yes, like it can be treated. So that was like the initial.
What were all of your initial reactions to finding that out? Because as you said, I'm sure that was really devastating and scary.
Like I said, it was very devastating. I felt like I was in a nightmare. I couldn't wake up from, I don't know. It was really bad. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's total devastation. I mean, Chloe is our youngest of three children. And, you know, to find out that she was diagnosed at that time with cancer, everything just turned upside down for me mentally. And it was like, what, how? why. A lot of questions came about. And then to find out, I guess, the odds of children having this type of cancer. But as we've been on this journey, we've learned a lot more about this rare type of cancer. Well,
uncommon
type cancer. Yeah. But it's, you know, we found out that it's really uncommon because it goes undiagnosed for so long because it's a very slow growing type cancer. So
what happened next? What was the treatment journey and where are you now?
So as far as treatment options with this rare type cancer, Dr. York at the University of Maryland here where we live, she reached out to Hopkins, to St. Jude Children's Hospital in Virginia. She reached out to multiple different places that treat children cancers. But with this rare type cancer, it was that wasn't the destination for Chloe. It turned out that a worker at the hospital in the radiology department got word or somehow communication got around that Chloe was dealing with this rare type cancer. And they just so happened to have worked in Iowa with Dr. Sue Odorizio, who's a pediatric oncologist. She's like a world specialist. And her husband is actually Dr. Odorizio as well. He treats adult cancer patients for neuroendocrine tumors. So when we found out that information, that was our next journey. Our next path was to Iowa.
And in Iowa, she would receive a clinical trial.
Yeah, she was able to take part in a clinical trial.
She was able to get into that. And we would have to travel every 6 weeks. She did 3 cycles of a IV radiotherapy and
medication.
Yeah. And she did well. She handled it well. And it did show some positive results because it shrunk some of the tumors. But Dr. O told us that eventually Chloe will need a transplant. So we were hoping that the treatment would, you know, take most of these tumors away. But as time went on, we realized that, you know, she would need a transplant, a double transplant at that.
Yeah. And I was going to mention that the transplant Chloe would require would include not only her liver, but also her pancreas. When we found out about the transplant option, they ended up eventually doing a biopsy of her pancreas and determined that she indeed had a neuroendocrine tumor in her pancreas as well.
That's where it started. They believe that's where the cancer started and it has spread to her liver.
So I read that Chloe, you know, kind of made that decision when she wanted to do the transplant. Could you tell me a little bit about that and, you know, how she came to that decision and what that was like?
Yeah, so when Chloe and Dad went to Iowa, they went for the consultation. This was before she got treatment. And Dr. O mentioned further down the line that, you know, she may need a transplant. So the idea was to start her treatment and Dr. O wanted to shrink some of her tumors and then have her listed for a transplant. But Chloe decided at the time that she didn't want to do treatment. She said, why can't they just take it out? And why can't I just get a transplant?
She's such a brave soul. So, I mean, she literally, that was her word. She said, why can't they just take it out? Let's just do it. And Dr. Odorizio listened to her and said, well, let's look at that option and see, you know, how that works out. But it was later determined that in order for Chloe to be listed for transplant, that we had to have some positive results from the treatment. So we ended up reverting back to getting the treatment. And like, as Mom mentioned, the treatment did indeed shrink, show positive results in shrinking the tumors. So Chloe was listed.
We've been through a lot with as far as being listed for transplant. Initially, we
started in Maryland.
Yeah, we started in Maryland and we thought that, you know, she was going to be on the list there. But then we got a call like a few days later and they told us like, the doctor decided that he wasn't comfortable doing that type of surgery.
Well, really quick, just to interject. So when we started, when we was in Iowa, before even getting listed for transplant, Dr. Odorizio had mentioned that in considering a transplant, she's aware of a surgeon in Minnesota who could potentially do that for Chloe.
Yeah, so
when we came back home.
Yeah, it was a whole roundabout way how we got to this point. She mentioned Minnesota. It was 2018 when she mentioned a doctor. She didn't tell us the name. She said, I know of a doctor that may be able to perform this type of surgery. And we went on to be listed at Georgetown in D.C. So when things didn't work out in Maryland, we were listed in DC, and they listed her, and then they decided, like my husband was saying, they wanted her to get the treatment and they wanted to see some positive results. So they actually took her off the list while she was getting treated. So from August to November, she wasn't listed, and she finished her treatment in November, and in December, Georgetown relisted her.
And when we got to Georgetown, just I guess part of the feeling that I had is because as we're going to these different facilities and doctors, and I'm speaking of transplant, I'm doing a little bit of research. I'm Googling, looking up names and seeing what some of the background and history is. And I found out that the transplant surgeon at Georgetown was actually a professor who taught the transplant surgeon at University of Maryland, that he was who was initially going to be potentially doing the surgery. So I felt like, you know, Georgetown is it. We're getting the best of the best. We're getting the teacher. But after a year of being listed there with no offers, we reached back out to Dr. Odorizio in Iowa, and she actually at that time connected us with Minnesota. So we went to Minnesota for consultation at the end of January.
January 2020. And
beginning of February 2020, she was double listed. She was listed in the D.C. region as well as over in Minnesota.
And I'll never forget when Chloe had met Dr. Chinnikova in Minnesota after our consultation, and we toured the hospital. She said, Mommy, I want him to do my surgery. Okay. Like, we will see.
Yep. So things when we got listed there, I mean, after a year of being told, you know, you need to be prepared for that call any moment, I personally felt like it wasn't coming. But when we got listed in Minnesota, we got the first call.
Yeah, June the 9th.
In June.
And that was like a dress rehearsal for us. It was early in the morning. We received the call. They said they have an organ. And we was on a flight that evening on our way to Minnesota. And we got there. And at that time, they had the COVID restrictions. So only one parent could go in the hospital, which was really, really hard. My husband, actually, he didn't even leave the hospital. He stayed out front. And I was upstairs with Chloe. And they were prepping her and getting her ready for surgery. And my husband said, I want to come up. You know, you come down, let me come up. I said, okay.
Yeah, because they told us that the surgery was going to last about 12 hours or so. So I was sitting in the rental car in front of the hospital for a couple of hours just talking to them on the phone because I couldn't go in, only one parent. But right before things was really getting moving as they was preparing, I asked mom, let me come up for a moment just to give her a kiss before they get things started. And then, you know, I'll head to the hotel. So during that 15-20 minute process, when I went upstairs, the surgeon came in the room and pulled me to the side. He actually took me out the room and said, can I speak to you? He said, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to cancel this transplant. And I'm kind of a jokester myself. So I was like, he's joking. He's joking around, but you know, we're talking about something very serious. He said that we refer to it as the titers, didn't match up perfectly. So the pancreas, the transplanted pancreas in Chloe from this donor would more likely reject. So he didn't want to take the chance.
Yeah, and even to this day, like I'm grateful that Dr. C didn't take that chance, because I know that this type of surgery has not been performed a lot, if it has ever been performed in a child. And I know that sometimes, you know, doctors, they, you know, want to be the first sometimes. And thankfully, Dr. Chinnikova was not like that. He was very humble and he really cared. And even though we had traveled all the way from Maryland to Minnesota, I'm so thankful that he did cancel that transplant.
He's a very humble doctor. And I must add, mention about his humbleness. We've been very fortunate and blessed to have the team of surgeons and doctors that we have. I mean, they're like family to us. I mean, I actually have Dr. Chinnapotla's phone number in my phone. Now I can text him and call him at any time. The same with Dr. O in Iowa. I remember reaching out to her. She answered the phone. I'm like waiting for, you know, a nurse or receptionist to answer the transfer. No, she answered the phone. And the same with Dr. York here in Maryland. You know, they've all like just really have been there for us and been very supportive.
Well, she has a medical team here in Maryland. She has, you know, like her nephrologist, endocrinologist, and then in Iowa, she has Dr. O, that's her oncologist. And then now in Minnesota, she has a whole transplant team. And thankfully, they all, you know, are able to communicate.
So as Mom mentioned, that initial call was definitely a dress rehearsal for us because we wasn't prepared anymore to really be ready to go. So when we got that call, I mean, it was a scramble. First we had to get our emotions intact. But, you know, from finishing up, getting our bags together, because we had to prepare to be there for 3 months. We had to get plane tickets, you know, figure out the hotel, the rental car. Everything is happening on the fly.
Yeah. And then we have two other children. At the time, my daughter was 16. We had a 13-year-old, so we kind of had to figure that out, too.
Yeah, we did. We were fortunate. We had a family member on standby who was ready to come and stay here with them. But, you know, it's just everything, getting everything in motion. It was definitely a whirlwind, but we knew how serious this was and Chloe having a quality of life and longevity. So, you know, we pretty much was whatever it takes, you know, that's what we're going to do. After the cancellation, we was back home the next day. After that, we were prepared.
A little more prepared. Like I said, it was a dress rehearsal, but we got the second call on August the 3rd, and that call came in the evening.
Never forget.
Yeah, we were
on our way to the market.
And
I just parked the vehicle, and the call ID came up, and I seen it was a Minnesota number, and I was like, this is them. They're calling with an offer.
Yeah, and I remember his reaction was like, yes.
Yeah, the emotions, everything was different.
Yeah, he was different this time. I was like more so like, oh my God, because I knew this was it, especially when she described that Chloe was the first offer. They offered the organ to her first. And then this time he had the donor had the same blood type as her and a 4-year-old little boy. And I just remember feeling like, you know, I remember feeling like this may be it, you know?
So I was going to say that the first call definitely prepared us because by the time the second call came, you know, I had already had prepared questions in my mind that I knew to ask pertaining to, you know, the whole process to be more comfortable and to have some answers prior to, you know, moving forward. So it definitely prepared us going through that the first time. And like Mom said, the initial offer for Chloe in June, the donor, she was the third offer for that donor. And like Mom said, for this, the second call, she was the first offer for the donor.
Yeah, and so we had to get out of Maryland really quickly. And they wanted us.
That second call came in, like she said, in the evening around 6:30 or so East Coast time. So not too many flights were leaving out that night.
Yeah, so we had to leave out on the first thing that morning, and they wanted us there as soon as possible. So I remember we got on the plane and we arrived in Minnesota around 9:30, and we was at the hospital.
And hold on, one of the most important things was they lifted the COVID restrictions where they now allow two parents instead of one.
Yeah, that was.
So that was, after going through that experience, that was a game changer because there was no way I would have been able to do it without her being there as well.
Yeah, so we arrived at the hospital around 10 a.m. and they got a prep. And this time it wasn't like no turning back. They rolled her off the surgery at 12 noon. And she was in surgery for 11 and a half hours.
Yeah, there was a disclaimer, not a disclaimer, but you know, so Chloe is getting ready for this huge surgery, but because of COVID, you know, being what it is, the surgeon had to inform us that Chloe, upon admission, had to take a COVID test. And the COVID test was going to take approximately 3 or 4 hours for them to receive it. But they have to move forward with the surgery because everything is time sensitive. So they said, with the possibility of Chloe's test coming back positive, he said by that time, he expect to have the pancreas removed from her body. He said they would have to stop if her test was positive. So we had to make the decision if we wanted them to move forward without having the COVID test results or not. But we knew, you know, that this was the time. So we looked at each other and it was like, you know, full steam ahead. And thankfully, they called us during the surgery and said the test came back and it was negative and everything is going well. So that was a great relief in the early part of the surgery.
The surgery went well, and Dr. Chinnicola, he came out and he explained to us like how she did. He said she did well and that it was going to be a really long recovery. And he told us that this first week would be very crucial and he wanted us to remain positive. And he also had a picture of her liver, her old liver, and her old pancreas. And when he showed us the picture, we always heard the doctors say numerous tumors, but to actually see her liver filled with numerous tumors, we couldn't even count. And it was so shocking. And once the surgeon left, I fell to my knees in the waiting area and I just let out this scream. And one of the nurses came out. She was like, I hope that was a good scream. And I was like, yes. But Chloe, it took a few hours to get her into recovery. And thankfully, we both were able to stay in the ICU with her. And they warned us that she would have tubes all in her throat, like all these IVs and everything.
Yeah, there were machines everywhere. Tubes everywhere.
So when we first looked at her, it was hard, but I was so thankful that, you know, she had finally, you know, got this surgery and, you know, just moving forward. She had some bumps in the road because she ended up getting 2 more surgeries after her transplant and 1 big procedure. So that was all in the course of 6 weeks of her being there. So recovery was up and down, but overall, you know, she was doing really well. And the team at University of Minnesota Children's Hospital, they were amazing. And the way that they kept the tabs on her, like they knew everything that was going on with her. They was checking her blood, doing her labs like every hour. At one time, she had a nurse in there with her 24 hours. It was pretty intense, but I'm thankful that they were able to keep an eye on everything because that's, you know, if they wasn't paying attention to certain things, a lot of things could have went wrong. Yeah.
And just to add to that, whatever, like Mom said, they did an excellent job. You know, we're really appreciative of the staff there, but being there, being her dad, whatever they didn't see, I saw.
Oh, yeah.
we were hawks in there. I mean, one of us were by her side, I mean, literally the entire time. If not both of us, one of us was. I think there was one time when she was sleeping where we both left out in that whole time frame that she was there.
The whole time, yeah, the whole 6 weeks in the hospital.
Hear the rest of Chloe's story tomorrow in part 2, where her parents discuss the emotional impact of the experience on their family and how they were able to get through it. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.